You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain.
Come to the Dark Side, Part 3.
Evil Leg Locks and the Evil Leg Lockers Who Lock Legs. The Modern Story. In this four-part mini-series, I'm discussing the controversy regarding the use of leg locks in submission grappling. In the first installment, I told the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu part of this story. In the second, I told the Russian Sambo part, in which I described how the rule set of sport Sambo tends to induce the athlete to prefer leg locks over other submission holds, and to go for them hard and fast. Another result of this set of rules is that Sambists have less incentive to develop a positional game. What does that mean? Well, in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, a great amount of importance is placed on gaining a control position on the opponent by either pinning them to the mat in one way or another, or attaching yourself to their back, or, failing either of those, by wrapping your legs around them. These positions severely limit the opponent's options, assisting powerfully in protecting the grappler who is imposing the control, and also helping to tire the opponent out, leading to easier submission attacks. Control positions also help the grappler to retain control if a submission attempt fails, allowing for more future attempts. The mantra for the BJJ man is position before submission. But the positional approach to submission grappling is time-consuming, and sport Sambo's limited time on the ground lends itself less to such a game. But more on the positional game later. Today I'll tell you the modern part of the story. In part one of this series, I mentioned that I personally began learning leg locks through shoot wrestling nearly a decade before I began training in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Once I did begin my BJJ training, I became fascinated with developing my own positional game. This tended to draw me away from leg locks for a while because the way they were done at the time didn't lend itself well to the positional game. Why was this the case? Well, all submission techniques fall somewhere on a spectrum in relation to a positional game. At one end are the techniques that, should you attempt the submission and fail, are still likely to leave you in a pretty good position. The cross-collar choke from the guard is a great example of this. It's unnecessary to open your guard to execute the choke. That means that if your choking attack fails, you still have the opponent in your guard. You've lost nothing in a positional sense. On the other end of the spectrum are those submissions which, if they fail, leave you in a worse position than you were in before, sometimes much worse. And if you still have several minutes to survive on the ground, you have a problem. The state of the art for leg locks back in the 1990s and early 2000s was such that nearly every one of its techniques resided at that risky end of the spectrum. That was fine for Sambo, or MMA, but much less so for a position-based grappling game. Another aspect of leg locks in those days was a common form of misbehavior. This happened when a student was being frustrated by his opponent in the normal course of rolling, and then abandoned positional grappling altogether and essentially went for a Hail Mary by seizing his opponent's ankle without gaining control over any other part of his body, and then trying like hell to break the foot off. This usually happened when the misguided student was trying to pass the guard of a better partner. Such incidents do not constitute evidence that leg locks are inherently dangerous. Just that any frenzied, desperate attempt at any submission hold is dangerous. Then the state of the art for leg locking began to change. My first perception of this was in 1998. That was when the first Abu Dhabi Combat Championship was held. First, some background. A man named Sheikh Tahnoon, the son of the former president of the United Arab Emirates, had attended college in the U.S. during the 90s. While there, he trained in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and developed a passion for grappling. He later decided to promote a grappling competition in his home emirate of Abu Dhabi. Now, at first, that might seem a little crazy. Abu Dhabi is pretty far away from, well, nearly everywhere. Who's going to show up for such an event? But Sheikh Tahnoon had an ace in the hole. He was obscenely wealthy. Combine that fact with the fact that up to that point, there was no appreciable prize money to be earned by competing in submission grappling, and we begin to see a formula for success. Most sport grapplers competed for the notoriety and to attract customers for their academy, or even for their seminar business. Sheikh Tahnoon's fat wallet gave him a lot of pull with even top-level grapplers by allowing him to pay travel expenses and to offer generous prize money. Another different feature of his proposed event would be that the athletes would only be allowed to compete by invitation. A small number of athletes would be selected from among the very best grapplers in the world, from every popular discipline: jiu-jitsu, sambo, judo, and wrestling in all of its varieties. That made it an honor to simply be invited to compete. A rule set was put together that was thought to allow all of these styles to compete fairly with one another. In an interesting note, the competitors would not wear the typical garment of judo and jiu-jitsu, the gi. Instead, they would wear skin-tight lycra shorts and shirts. This, it was hoped, would make wrestlers feel more welcome and comfortable. And most importantly for our subject today, all forms of leg lock submissions would be legal. This would be something new and exciting. Like the Ultimate Fighting Championship from 5 years before, fans could see style pitted against style. As I said earlier, the first ADCC event happened in 1998 and was a rousing success. It continues to be so to this day. It was also, like the UFC, the birth of a new sport. In this case, submission grappling, a separate entity from any of its parent sports. Other submission grappling events sprang up almost overnight. There are now plenty of grapplers who train and compete exclusively in submission grappling. Another set of events that helped demonstrate that the state of the art in grappling was changing first came to my attention in 2005. It was then that I purchased, watched, and diligently practiced from a leg lock instructional video series produced by sambo practitioner Scott Sonnen, called Mastering the Saddle. Mr. Sonnen took the basic leg entangling positions of sambo and re-engineered some of them into four interlocking control positions, which he dubbed full saddle, side saddle, rear saddle, and reverse saddle. Yes, you heard me right. Control positions. Eureka. The saddle system, while far from perfect, was way ahead of its time. Using this system, one could now take nearly every leg locking technique and try it from a functional position of control. Then, in 2007, one of my students gifted me with another groundbreaking instructional video series by the Jiu-Jitsu and Abu Dhabi champion and thinker, Ryan Hall. The series was about one leg locking control position called the 50-50 guard. Mr. Hall had a proven, indeed a stellar competitive record, and had won tons of matches from the 50-50 guard with leg locks. His insights expanded the positional leg lock game even further. Other pioneers were also at work during this time developing new leg locking positional concepts and techniques. Among them were Abu Dhabi champion Dean Lister, Armenian-American sambo practitioner Gokor Chivichian, and perhaps most important of all, the mad jiu-jitsu genius of the Henzo Gracie Academy, John Danaher. Between these and other grappling innovators, a series of interconnected leg-locking control positions were developed. These new positions had names like the Reaper, 411, and Outside Ashi, and they were the basis for a whole new lower body grappling game. This series of developments has lifted the submission grappling game to a new level, and the evolution is ongoing. Then in the late 2000s, the major Brazilian jiu-jitsu governing body, the IBJJF, introduced a ridiculous new rule. It is a prohibition not of a technique, but of a position. The position is called reaping the knee, an unnecessarily inflammatory name for describing a control position. Try Googling the phrase reaping the knee to find video illustrations of just what this means if you want. Anyway, it involves wrapping your leg around the outside of your opponent's leg and using it to force his hip into a position of internal rotation. This is the same thing you do with your leg to the opponent's shoulder in the submission called omoplata. One of the many values of this position is that it gives a high degree of control over the opponent's ability to rotate to face his attacker. This limits his responses and helps set up finishing holds. Anyway, by making the act of reaping the knee illegal, the IBJJF eliminated from its competitions the chance to use the strongest of the newly developed positions developed by the positional leg lock pioneers I mentioned earlier. A clearer signal could not have been sent that the modern leg lock game was unwelcome at IBJJF events. This stoked even more resentment in the grappling world. That pretty much sums up the modern story. Next time, I'll finish this mini-series by making the case for the modern leg lock game as being just as safe as the upper body grappling game. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, and check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about The Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.